Michael Stewart. This is number 0404, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0404. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Alexander Finbo, the co-author of When Big Bears Invade, a children's story for adults that features the Godzilla-style destruction of Canadian cities.
Culture, particularly film, TV, and books, tends to favor America and other countries over Canada when it comes to mass Armageddon-style destruction. Anytime aliens come to our planet or monsters rise from the depths of the ocean, they tend to favor New York, Washington, London, Tokyo, and Paris for their attacks. They tend to ignore Toronto, Montreal, Edmonton, Calgary, and even Winnipeg. I feel that Canada, to have the kind of cultural recognition it deserves, it needs to have some giant destruction.
Garth Sundum is the author of Real Kids, Real Stories, Real Change, and also Real Kids, Real Stories, Real Character. How did these books come about?
My son had health problems, and, you know, thanks to the wonders of modern medical technology, he was able to have a very good experience. But we had the opportunity to interface with a lot of kids with a lot of challenges. And, you know, I kept being in these waiting rooms and being like, oh my God, these kids are amazing. And, you know, somebody should write about these kids. And then I thought, well, you know, I should write about these kids. And that was the genesis of the idea.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and Book Banter rounds the bases with future Hall of Famer Tim Raines and his book, Rock Solid. So get ready for some serious base stealing in the next inning of the Stuff File Program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0404 was Michael Stewart, a displaced Maritimer now living in Ottawa. Those are his words, not mine. Almost sounds like a refugee status, doesn't it? Anyway, thank you very much, Michael, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? The Lincoln Tunnel became the tunnel of self-love when a man high on PCP blocked traffic with his minivan to take time to, shall we say, enjoy the pleasure of his own company. Port Authority police arrested 48-year-old Ishmael Esquilin of Passaic, New Jersey, when his Dodge minivan was found stopped in the middle of the New Jersey-bound side of the Hudson River Tunnel, holding up traffic. When cops approached the car, they found Esquilin removing his clothes and performing a lewd act, a Port Authority spokesman said. The idling minivan was still running. Cops also found a glass pipe and a small glass bottles containing PCP on the passenger seat floor. After cops covered Esquilin with a blanket, he admitted that he had smoked PCP. What was that old Freudian dream? Hot dogs chasing donuts through the Lincoln Tunnel? Yeah. I get the feeling he's going to get a lot of time to spend some quality time with himself. Yeah. A company filed a workers' compensation claim with their insurance company over an incident that hurt their employee. The company said that while Sheila White was working for them at the Sanctair Energy Partners in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, a sprinkler fell on her, causing injury to her forehead. The insurance company became suspicious of her claim, and they contacted police. During their investigation, the Florida Division of Investigative and Forensic Services requested to review security footage of the incident. White had claimed that the metal sprinkler fell from the ceiling, bounced off her desk, and struck her in the head. The video proved that the sprinkler fell from the ceiling and landed on her desk, but it did not bounce back. Instead, the video showed White taking the sprinkler, looking around, and hitting herself with the piece of metal. White did not get any money. Instead, she was arrested and convicted of insurance fraud. She faced 5 years in prison, but was sentenced to 18 months of probation instead. You know, I have the urge to want to hit her with a lead pipe, but clearly she's willing to do that herself, so the point is moot. Okay, it's been a while, but we have another ridiculous story of zero tolerance that always seems to be coupled with a lack of common sense. We start with a written statement from the school board in question. The board has a zero tolerance of violent, disruptive, harassing, intimidating, bullying, or any other inappropriate behavior by its students. That statement comes from Ohio's Edgewood City School Superintendent Russ Fussnecker. Here's what he was writing about. Zachary Bolin, a 13-year-old student at Edgewood Middle School in Trenton, was suspended for 10 days with the possibility for expulsion. His infraction, according to a notice sent to his parents, was liking a post on social media that indicated potential school violence. The post was a picture of an airsoft gun. The boy's parents let him play with them, and he clicked like on it from home, not during school hours. When he arrived at school the next day, he was searched for weapons and suspended, even though none were found, and school officials sent out an email about the alleged threat to all parents, even though no one made any threat whatsoever. He never shared, he never commented, he never made a threatening post, says his father, Marty Bolin. After an uproar, including pushback from the livid father, the school backed off, erasing the suspension from Zachary's record. Fussnecker explained that regardless of the kind of gun it is, it's a gun. And until I can get to the investigation, I have to look into it, and those students have to be removed. Okay, this is getting dangerously close to idiot of the day territory, but so far on this show, I've avoided awarding such a moniker to this kind of oblivious bureaucracy. I will make this observation, though, looking back at Fussnecker's written statement, and let me read it again. The school board has a zero tolerance of violence, disruptive, harassing, intimidating, bullying, or any other inappropriate behavior by its students. Okay, looking back at that, I'm beginning to suspect that the school superintendent is perhaps projecting onto the kids some of the issues he might have had back in school when he was a youth, because nobody, and I mean nobody with the name Russ Fussnecker, is going to get through all of his educational process unscathed by teasing unless he was homeschooled. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Are you ever concerned about giant bears attacking major cities, Godzilla style? Well, Alexander Finbow is the co-author of When Big Bears Invade. It's an illustrated children's book for adults. Alexander joins us on the line right now from Toronto. Hi, Alexander.
Hello, Peter. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So what's the deal with this grizzly bear colossus attack, basically?
Well, as a proud Canadian, I've been a Canadian citizen for 2 years now, I felt that there is an injustice that needs writing in the way that culture, particularly film, TV, and books, tends to favor America and other countries over Canada when it comes to mass Armageddon-style destruction. I don't know if you've noticed, but anytime aliens come to our planet or monsters rise from the depths of the ocean, they tend to favor New York, Washington, London, Tokyo, and Paris for their attacks. They tend to ignore Toronto, Montreal, Edmonton, Calgary, and even Winnipeg. I feel that Canada to have the kind of cultural recognition it deserves, it needs to have some giant destruction.
You know,
and I wanted to make that injustice corrected.
You know, a lot of us didn't mind being under the carnage radar. I find it interesting. I was looking through it, and it is a great book, by the way. But it's also It's also one with a very important message, right?
Yes. Well, there's a lot of fun to be had in destroying mass destruction, but it's a lot more poignant when you can tie it to a theme, which is an important discussion point. And I think every Canadian can agree that bears will be environmentalists, as it's their habitats that are constantly being eroded and destroyed. So it's a strong motivating factor for them to start doing something about it.
Now, you've chosen a giant bear. You, by the way, and your co-writer, the artist, Nico Rudolph, you've chosen a giant bear. As you say, you're a proud Canadian, a new Canadian. Did you at any time think of any other more typically Canadian creature, like maybe a giant beaver or a giant loon or anything else? Or was it always the bear that you were going with?
I did consider those options, and that you may see some of those typical Canadian animals popping up in the second and third books, particularly when they head down to America to sort things out down there. But I think I live in Canmore in the Rocky Mountains in Alberta, and we're surrounded by bears. There's bears that sleep in our backyard. You can bump into grizzly bears and black bears on the trails, and there's just something quintessentially Canadian about the fact that we live side by side with such majestic and fearsome creatures that they had to be the number one go-to for as much fun as a loon destroying Canada would be. I think there's something very exciting about a bear becoming huge and bringing Canadian style cultural destruction to cities that maybe the loon wouldn't quite be as immediately engaging. Well, for me anyway, and I hope for the readers, the bear is something you go, oh yes, grizzly bears are scary, and 1,000 foot tall grizzly bears are even scarier.
Now, the book is just out, so it's new to the world as it is, and as I said earlier, we Canadians aren't necessarily used to the idea of being the victims of any kind of mass carnage in this way. What is the reaction or the early buzz been about your book, either from those within Canada or those outside? Because, you know, one of the biggest fears we have outside of being the subject of carnage is being ignored by the rest of the world.
Exactly. Well, we've just had the launch in Toronto and Calgary, and the reception so far has been great. It's always a little bit nervous being an author putting a new book out, how people are going to react. But so far, people are loving the idea and the way that we've handled the material. I wrote the book to be read aloud. It's in rhyme. And with Nico's fantastic illustrations, it gives it a double-edged attack with the oral and the visual. And so far, people are, like proud Canadians, are embracing this opportunity to put Canada on the map, finally, with this kind of destruction. And we just heard from our distribution partner in the UK that they have already pre-sold the books that were shipped over to England. And I think they've only just arrived in the warehouse, so they want more, which is very nice to hear. So apparently, outside of Canada, people are very happy to see giant bears destroying Canada.
Now, you are in Toronto right now. As you say, you live in BC. You are in Toronto for a book launch. And I'm just curious, as you fly in to the city of Toronto, do you look at the CN Tower any differently now, considering what you did to it in your book?
Well, I was very confused as we landed to see that CN Tower was still standing. I was expecting to see smoke everywhere, piles of rubble, emergency vehicles and people screaming. So what I realized at that point is that the book is not so much a true story as a prophecy of what's going to happen at any day. So we're on our lookout here just to make sure that when it does start happening, we're aware and we can get some good photos and then run away as fast as possible.
I mentioned in the introduction that it's an illustrated children's book for adults. But can you read it to kids, or is it a little too scary for them?
You can read it to kids. One of the great things that we've discovered is, because we've been reading it to grade 5 and grade 4 classes at schools in Alberta, it's just how much Canadian children love the absurdity of the humor of giant bears destroying places they love, and how they cotton on to the environmental message as well. So it's become a great conversation piece for them. We've done some marketing style, like Canadian style tourist posters associated to the books, and a lot of kids are buying the posters or badgering their parents to get the prints and posters and put them on the bedroom walls of their favorite city being destroyed, which makes us feel very proud.
Now,
it's a fun book to read aloud, and kids love hearing that.
Of course, I live here in Montreal. I don't want to give anything away, but the situation here in Montreal does involve poutine, and I'll just leave that out there for those to take a look at the book themselves, which I thought was a fascinating way of doing things. You alluded a little while ago to the fact that there are more coming out. So you have others planned?
Yep. When Big Bears Invade, book 2, is in the works, and it tells the story from the point of view of some of the humans in the first book arguing about what really happened. And it gives us a chance to revisit a couple of cities and look at alternative ways of destroying them, and also include some of the cities that we had to drop from the first book for space. So especially in the East Coast, you'll see a lot more of those cities turning up. And then the third book is the bears heading south of the new border, the wall, to sort out America, because they've decided they can't leave things as it is down there. And then there is even a fourth book, which will be the bears coordinating with other bears across the globe to rise up and press the off and on again switch for those countries, including panda bears and drop bears. So it is, the silliness continues on a much bigger scale.
Wow. Do you foresee this coming or becoming something like either an animated cartoon or maybe even a feature-length film? How about that?
I hope so. I'd love to see a huge bear destroying Toronto in a IMAX 3D theater, like someone like Guillermo del Toro directing, or one of the great Canadian directors handling it. But a cartoon show would be awesome too, and then that would be a good opportunity to put the humor that's through the book into the TV medium. That would be great. Like the bears surfing the tsunami into Vancouver, for instance. They could have a lot of fun with that. I'd love to see that show.
Well, it really is a great and fascinating idea. Canada's bears are fighting back, and who knew carnage could be so much fun? And so patriotic at the same time.
Exactly. I think that's the great thing about being Canadian. If this was an American book, and I talked about this with Nico when we started working on it, because he was asking, well, do we have the military reacting? And I'm like, no, because this is Canada. In Canada, we politely deal with things and come up with a polite solution. If it was in America, there would be jets flying everywhere and bombs being dropped and missiles, and everyone would be firing at the bears, but not so in Canada.
Yeah, here we only use our military for heavy snow and extreme flooding, so that's basically it.
Exactly. Yes, the military would, if we were to do a book with the military in Canada, it would be When Big Bears Invade, and then the military come in and clean things up afterwards.
Alexander, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. You have a website, too, that people can go to and learn more about the book, correct?
Yes. Head to renegadeartsentertainment.com.
Thank you very much for being on the program, sir.
My pleasure. Lovely to talk to you.
Alexander Finbow, co-author of When Big Bears Invade. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0404, and you'll find links to Alexander's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment.
There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Stand by. Transmitting sound.
You've got a busy life with a lot going on. So let the Kelly Alexander Show keep you up to date on health and lifestyle trends, education, entertainment, and current events. Our weekly one-hour show provides you with interesting and educational information while also seeing the lighter side of life. We enjoy interviewing celebrities as well as they share their stories of struggle and success. Emmy Award winner Mia Michaels of So You Think You Can Dance, Grammy winner Jody Watley, international singing sensation Taylor Dane, and astronaut Julie Payette have all graciously appeared on our show. Don't forget that we tackle important issues as well, like breast cancer awareness, bullying, and texting while driving. There's never a dull moment on the show, so please make sure to stop by and join us. www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to author Garth Sundem. His 2 new books, Real Kids, Real Stories, Real Change, and also Real Kids, Real Stories, Real Character. Stuart Nolman is in with another edition of Book Banter, and we do indeed have an Idiot of the Day coming your way, plus lots more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio, a show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, we have a couple of stories that deal with criminals who really didn't think things through. Number one, 21-year-old Edwin Charge Jr. and 2 accomplices allegedly attempted a theft at a Hood River, Oregon business on April 23rd, but fled as police arrived. The accomplices were apprehended, but Charge took off across Interstate 84 on foot, outrunning police until he fell off a cliff to his death. Oopsie. And number 2, police said 34-year-old Tara Cranmer tried to elude them in a stolen truck on tiny Ocracoke Island in North Carolina on April 22nd. Now, since it is a tiny island, the road ends, and she was captured on the dunes after abandoning the truck. If you're planning a crime on an island, at least have a boat handy. Yeah. And I'm going to share with you now a couple of stories. Actually, there are a couple of really cringe-worthy, fetish-like stories, so brace yourself. I'm warning you now. Story number 1, 28-year-old Timothy Blake faced several charges in January after admitting to a spree of semen incidents at a Walmart in Marietta, Ohio, because as you know on this program, everything happens at Walmart. The liquid was indeed the fruit of his loins, as he finally admitted, but he squirted it at his female victims only from a syringe rather than the, you know, old-fashioned way. Well, no matter how you look at it, it still makes you go, ooh. Oh, but I'm not finished. Story number 2, 27-year-old Brian Boyd was also charged in January. What's with January? With squirting women from a syringe in a similar series of incidents at a Tampa Target store. I'm sorry, is this now a thing? Is there some sort of league for this? Anyway, although Boyd had simulated masturbation, the syringe itself contained only white liquid hair conditioner. Just what is the thought process with these people? Do they think this will attract women? And if it did, would you really want to be near the type of woman this might attract? I mean, wow. Police in Arkansas have arrested 2 people for stealing a 16-foot trailer that contained thousands of dollars worth of Little Debbie snack cakes. Police say the trailer was discovered missing early Wednesday from outside a storage unit in Jonesboro, about 115 miles northeast of Little Rock. Now, according to a police report, the trailer belonged to a Little Debbie salesman and contained $5,000 worth of snacks. Jonesboro police said the trailer was located in neighboring Mississippi County that night during a traffic stop. A police report says none of the snack cakes were touched. Two female suspects have been taken into custody. The trailer's owner, Roy Frazier, tells Jonesboro television station KAIT he's thankful his property was returned and that he's bought new locks for the trailer. Perhaps Little Debbie can turn this into an advertising campaign by stealing Klondike Bar's tagline. You know, what would you do for a Little Debbie snack cake? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, police in suburban Cleveland say a half-naked man intentionally crashed his car into a closed convenience store to get beer, injuring himself and a store employee. Rocky River police say the 45-year-old driver was wearing nothing from the waist down when he crashed through a store wall and told the worker he needed beer. Police say the man barricaded himself in a beer cooler and told police to shoot him, but they subdued him with a stun gun. The driver was taken to a hospital, as was the store employee, who suffered leg and chest injuries that weren't considered critical. The driver has been charged with impaired driving. Police say the worker was fortunate that a deli counter was between him and the car, preventing more serious injuries. Wow. Half naked from the waist down and self-barricaded in a beer cooler? Talk about shrinkage. And forget Little Debbie snack cakes. What would you do for a beer? Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Garth Sundem is back on the program with us. We've talked to him in the past about some of his books, such as Brain Candy, Brain Trust, and Beyond IQ. But Garth has now gone in a new direction. He's writing books for young adults. His latest titles are Real Kids, Real Stories, Real Change, Courageous Actions Around the World, and Real Kids, Real Stories, Real Character, Choices That Matter Around the World. Garth joins us on the line from Colorado via Skype. Hi, Garth.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Nice to have you back on the program with us once again.
Nice to hear the word tickety-boo.
So when did you transition from the books we've talked about with you in the past to doing books that are for young adults?
Well, I don't know. So I guess when is the easy question. Why might be a slightly harder question. I think there's authors who know what they want to do, right? There's the person who has that book in them, and they know what it is, and they're laser focused. You know, they point right at it, and that's what they write. And I've never quite been that person. It's always, I don't know. I guess it's like pouring water, and you know, some veins, I don't know, flow deeper, and some don't. And so I never thought that this, you know, I thought that young adult writing was going to be kind of a fun little thing to do on the side of my adult books. And it turns out that it has been way more fulfilling than I ever imagined.
Wow. So how did you come up with the first one? First of all, which was the first one?
The first one was Real Kids, Real Stories, Real Change. And, well, okay, so my son had health problems, and, you know, thanks to the wonders of modern medical technology, you know, he was able to have a very good experience, and he's a strong, smart, you know, kind young man. But we had the opportunity to, interface with a lot of kids with a lot of challenges. And, you know, I kept being in these waiting rooms and being like, oh my God, these kids are amazing. And, you know, somebody should write about these kids. And then I thought, well, you know, I should write about these kids. And, you know, I ended up, that was the genesis of the idea. So, you know, I was inspired not by stories of Abraham Lincoln or, you know, people you see on the news, but by the kid sitting there in the waiting room, or, you know, the kid who digs a well, or, you know, the kid who I don't know, raises money to buy paint for his elementary school cafeteria, and you know, and not just kids in the United States, but around the world. So it's funny, my books, you know, my adult books, they've always been brain books, right? They're all about the head, and that is super fun, right? You know, I can find these cool things that sort of sparkle in your neurons, and I love that. But this idea and this vein comes from a very different place. You know, it comes from the heart, not from the head, and it's new for me, and it's scary for me, and it's been really enriching.
So when you first started writing this one, the first one, Real Kids, Real Stories, Real Change, as you say, you've branched out and you've taken a look at situations with kids, not just in your own backyard, but around the world. Was that an idea that gelled immediately when you first started writing this book? Or were you just writing and it expanded and expanded and then encompassed the rest of the world?
Well, you know, as much as I say this is a different direction, you know, I still bring the same kind of writing process to it. It's the only thing I know. And that is that, you know, I'm a pre-planner. And so, you know, I definitely look at an idea and start to break it down. And, you know, my family, I lived in Norway and I lived in France growing up. My dad was just a professor. I mean, it's not like we were diplomats or anything, but it allowed me the opportunity to be in many different places and experience many different things. And so, I don't know, I guess, you know, the idea of an inspirational everyday kid is something that I hope is universal and something that, you know, I would want American kids to see is universal and also international kids to, you know, realize that American kids see things beyond the, you know, the oceans on either side, right?
Right.
And even Canada, Peter, Canada even exists.
Well, again, the title is Real Kids, Real Stories, Real Change. So can you give us an example of a real story?
Oh man, let me go back. So it's funny, I've got all these stories kicking around in my head right now because I'm writing a new one of these. They're sort of seriesing this thing out. Serializing? No, seriesing. That's a word now. You know, some of them are well-known kids. So I tried to split, you know, U.S. and international. I tried to split male and female stories. I tried to split well-known and absolutely not well-known stories. You know, I remember I've got an inventor from the Dominican Republic named Yasuel Rivera who builds stuff out of trash. And, you know, it's a story of pure creativity because he wanted to do it. You know, he's not like, okay, I need to check that box for my MIT interview or whatever. He's like, you know, I see stuff around me. I want there to be beauty in the world. I'm going to make it. And so he did. You know, I've got the story of, here's one that's more well-known. Tom Shar is this skateboard kid from California who was awesome to talk with. He was so refreshing and so kind, right? And he's the first person to land a 1080 on a skateboard. And what's cool is not the fact that he landed a 1080 on a skateboard, but the fact that he splatted himself across this mega ramp like so many times before he could pull this thing off, and he just like kept at it and kept at it and kept at it, and was a super cool kid. So, you know, I've got everything from caste system in India stuff to ecology work with, you know, mussels out on the East Coast of the United States. It's been a world journey, and it's been a great excuse to have cool conversations with interesting young people.
I understand one of the kids you talked to, a six-year-old named Ryan, who raised over $1 million to drill water wells in Africa?
Yeah, he's a well-known story, and so, correct. Ryan's wells is a big deal. And, you know, it's a very different experience Okay, one of the things I found that's fascinating when interfacing with now, what, 60, this is going to be 90 by the time I turn in this new manuscript, 90 kids, is that, you know, some kids are terrified to get on the phone with, you know, someone who's going to write their story. And then some kids like Ryan, man, by the time they're like 10 years old, they've been around the block and, you know, their mom knows how to schedule their Google calendar and they know how to get on Skype and like give an interview. And Ryan, it's like Ryan just told me the story and all I had to do is write it down. And other kids, but I think adult authors, by the time you talk to, or I talk to a lot of scientists, you know, I talk to, you know, MacArthur winners and Nobel winners and stuff for my adult books. And everyone by that point, they know how to tell their story. And I got to admit, I almost prefer the kids who don't know how to tell their story, who've never talked to anyone who is interested or in what they do or thinks that what they do is even interesting. And yet, though they don't even see it, they have a very inspiring story to tell.
Now, you say that you've got another manuscript that you're just about handing in. So obviously you're continuing with this. Do you see many more books in this genre that you've suddenly created?
Well, so I guess the short answer is yes. But, you know, the new one, and it won't be out for a bit, but it's Real Kids, Real Stories, Real Challenges. And my biggest challenge with this book is how, you know, I want to be honest in what I write, but I can't pull punches when writing for kids, but I'm telling some really difficult stories. And for me, every book is about, you know, learning how to do it. I love going into the process and kind of figuring out how to do it. And my biggest challenge with this new one is going to be, man, how to write about really hard topics without going over the line for 11-year-olds, you know?
Right. Well, it sounds like an amazing project of a series of books. So the ones that are out right now, Real Kids, Real Stories, Real Change, Courageous Actions Around the World, and also Real Kids, Real Stories, Real Character, Choices That Matter Around the World. Garth, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks, Peter.
Garth Sundom, author of Real Kids, Real Stories, Real Change, Courageous Actions Around the World, and Real Kids, Real Stories, Real Character, Choices That Matter Around the World. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0404, and you'll find links to Garth's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his books directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Every day, our world becomes a little more digital. With more and more of us communicating by email and paying our bills online, some believe it's only a matter of time before we become a paperless society. But I'm not holding my breath for that to happen. Oh, I use email as much as the next person, and even buy most of my books electronically these days. But there's one major generator of paper that keeps chugging along. The government. In 2016, one U.S. department alone, the Department of Health and Human Services, imposed an estimated 700 million hours of paperwork on Americans. That was up from only 400 million hours just 8 years earlier. Let's be fair, most of that increase in paperwork was due to the Affordable Care Act, so that could be changing in a big way. Now that Congress is debating health care reform again, that paperwork burden on Americans could be cut dramatically. How dramatically remains to be seen. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder. But here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And now coming up to bat for the Stuff File program and Book Banter, Stuart Nauman. Hello, Stu.
Hi, Peter. You better watch out because I'm pretty speedy on those bases.
Somehow I find that hard to believe. You're about as speedy as Eddie Goodell.
Or maybe just as quick as Speedy Gonzalez. I don't know.
Or Ron Say.
Ron Say. I can't believe you still remember that name. But on this edition of Book Banter, we are going to talk about a very speedy baseball player from the Expos, who we remember very fondly, Tim Raines, because earlier this January, Montreal Expos fans past and present breathed a collective sigh of relief and uttered a collective, "It's about time," when it was announced that all-star stolen base king Tim Rock Raines finally garnered enough votes and earned himself induction into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And that was after, 10 years worth of trying? Well, if you were an Expos fan throughout the 1980s, you couldn't help but notice Raines' presence on the diamond, especially after a base hit, when he was leading off the bag and ready to pounce so that he can steal second with lightning speed, which he succeeded most of the time. The excitement that Rock, that was his nickname, brought to the Expos with his base-stealing prowess throughout that decade, helped the Expos to a number of winning seasons and National League East title in 1981, and earned it the moniker Team of the 80s. Now, in his autobiography called Rock Solid, Raines recounts the good times and the frustrations he experienced as a member of the Expos on and off the field. Now, as well, Raines recounts with a great deal of candor about his cocaine habit that nearly derailed his career in 1982. He admits that being a rookie player in the majors and barely in his 20s and starting to earn a major league salary made him an easy victim to fall into the trap of fast living and constant partying, not to mention indulging in the drug of choice of major league players before steroids emerged. He even revealed that he carried packets of cocaine in the back pocket of his uniform and ended up sliding headfirst when he stole bases. Now you know why.
Yes, many of us had heard that story and others, which are probably not in the book, but I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that he admits in the book. And he credits the help and support of his Expo teammates and front office staff to help him on the road towards kicking the habit before it destroyed his abilities and his life. Now, another thing you learn about Raines is a strong sense of family, both on and off the field. And this is well exemplified as he recounts his efforts during the latter part of his career to play a ball game on the same field as his son, Tim Jr., who was carving out an impressive baseball career for himself in the minor leagues. And this was accomplished in 2001 during a spring training game when Raines returned to the Expos for the final time, and his son was playing for the Baltimore Orioles. Now, the book Rock Solid is indeed a rock-solid baseball memoir of one of the most honest, entertaining players the Expos have ever had on their roster. His vast love of the game, the people whom he played alongside with, and his family is quite genuine and is exhibited quite vividly throughout the pages of the book. Now, Tim Raines has given Expo fans a lot to cheer about when he graced the field throughout the 80s, and I'm sure many of those fans will be cheering loudly for him this July when he accepts his induction plaque in Cooperstown.
And he was also an extremely nice guy, too.
Yes, that's what I heard, and that's the impression I got when I read this book.
Yep, he is. The book is entitled?
Rock Solid by Tim Raines. It's published by HarperCollins, and it's $32.99.
And what other books do you recommend in a similar genre? And, you know, there really are, when it comes to baseball, so many to choose from.
Oh, I know. But if you're going to read Tim Raines' book, the one book that I recommend as a companion volume is Jonah Carey's Up, Up, and Away, which is a unabashed, thorough history of the Montreal Expos, and did very well when it was first published a couple of years ago. A terrific book. This was the book that was meant to be written about the history of the Expos and how it almost didn't happen, when it happened, and why it left Montreal for Washington. And Carey actually wrote the introduction to Raines' autobiography as well. So, good companion piece.
Excellent, excellent. So, again, the book is?
Rock Solid by Tim Rock Raines. It's published by HarperCollins, and it's $32.99.
And how can people find you? I'm assuming it's not in the dugout.
No, and it's on the clubhouse either. Not playing for Little League, that's for sure. But it's in the pages of the Montreal Times every week, every Saturday. Online at www.mtltimes.ca or in print.
Thank you very much, Stu, for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you, Peter. And wait a minute. I'm gonna go into my base stealing position. Wait till you see when I slide. It's just masterpiece.
I hope the neighbors can't see you through your window.
Well. I'm there than you can tell, that's for sure.
Stuart Nullman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about into the home stretch on this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you, and of course, an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on here on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, an elected official in a small Michigan town is serving a 90-day jail sentence after he was accused of forging documents to impress an overseas mistress. Charles Rogers is a member of the Village Council of Northport, which is north of Traverse City. Authorities say he created divorce documents with forged signatures of court officials and sent them to a woman in London. The Traverse City Record Eagle says the woman contacted Rogers' wife, who reached out to police. Rogers pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor and began a jail sentence recently. Northport Village President Phil Mikesell said Rogers plans to be released in time for the board's June meeting. Isn't that nice? I'm just waiting to see if his forgery becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, perhaps his wife is now considering making those documents real. And 41-year-old David Randall Bertram was detained in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, after police say he stole $10.38 worth of summer sausage from a grocery store. While Bertram was being escorted to the police car, he took off. He ran through a neighborhood, across lanes of highway traffic, and onto the Brooks Bridge. He then jumped off the bridge and to the ground approximately 7 to 8 feet below, police said. But even that didn't stop Bertram. Police had to use their tasers twice on Bertram before he was captured. Bertram was charged with providing a false name while lawfully detained, shoplifting, and resisting an officer without violence. You know, that must be some really, really, really good sausage. Really. According to Baton Rouge police, an officer spotted 36-year-old Cyrus Antoine drifting back and forth across multiple lanes around 2 a.m. Saturday morning. The officer also noted that Antoine had no license plate on his vehicle. The officer activated his lights and siren and attempted to pull over Antoine for a traffic stop near the Blue Bonnet exit, but he failed to stop and continued driving until he finally pulled over near the Prairieville exit. Police say the vehicle continued to drift across multiple lanes during the course of the pursuit. Antoine stopped and was taken into custody without incident. At this time, the officer says he could smell a strong aroma of marijuana coming from the vehicle, as well as on Anton's breath, and conducted a search. During the search, police found marijuana and Xanax pills throughout the vehicle. After recovering the evidence, Antoine admitted to police that he was trying to eat all of the marijuana so police wouldn't find any when he was pulled over. Antoine was arrested and booked into East Baton Rouge Parish Prison on charges of possession of marijuana, possession of drug paraphernalia, improper lane usage, driving without a license, driving without a license plate, obstruction of justice, and aggravated flight from an officer. Why do they never have a valid license in any of these stories? Also, if you're carrying that much contraband in your vehicle, don't you think you should at least have a license plate on your car? I mean, that should be a given. Seriously. It should be a given. Anyway, Trader Joe's has gained popularity among grocery shoppers in large part by having relentlessly sunny employees. But now that the firm has expanded from mellower California to more brusque New York City, it is learning that cheerfulness is harder to find. The company fired Thomas Nagel recently because, though he said he frequently smiled, he was told his smile was insufficiently genuine, and, backed by several colleagues, he has filed an unfair labor practice charge, and union organizers have taken notice. The United Labor Relations Board has already ruled against another employer that workers cannot be forced to convey that all-important positive work environment because they are entitled to have grievances. Yes, but are they entitled to have people-pleasing jobs when they're incapable of, you know, people-pleasing? I think that would be a valid question at this point, don't you? Anyway, you know what time it is, boys and girls? This is the moment you've all been waiting for. Yes, here at the end of the program, as we have for the last, 7 years we've done this show, 403 shows before this one, it's time, once again, right here, right now, boys and girls, for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff all presents the Idiot of the Day.
The owner of a local convenience store is charged with vandalizing several cars parked in front of his business. 36-year-old Yogesh Patel, owner of M&N Borderline Discount, called authorities at 8:37 p.m. on Friday and reported multiple cars parked illegally in front of his store. Police arrived to find 10 cars in the parking lot that had one or more tires deflated. Upon further investigation, officers determined that Patel and a store employee, 43-year-old Deepak Kumar Patel, called police to report the illegally parked cars, then walked outside and drilled holes into more than 20 tires. While investigating the incident, police said they recovered video surveillance footage from the store that shows the two men vandalizing the cars and the drill they allegedly used. Police said both men were arrested on charges of falsifying physical evidence and conspiracy to commit criminal mischief in excess of $1,500. They were released on $5,000 cash bail and are scheduled to be arraigned in 10th Circuit Court in Salem on June 28th. Now, why, oh why, would you go out and drill holes in tires of illegally parked vehicles just after you called the police about said vehicles, and also do it in a parking area monitored by video cameras from your own business? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0404. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0404. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on Patreon, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.